Instead of having a full army to fight it, there were just three people. Anna and Steve moved out of the way of Dia as flames ignited around her body. Her eyes glowed with power as a dozen fire lances erupted out of thin air and rammed the Bone Lord. It stumbled backward with the impact. Some of them broke through its armor and made their way inside, leaving holes in its body. Anna moved in first. It had crossed the 50% threshold, and it looked as if she was going to do everything in her power to stop it from activating its powers. She wasn't fast enough. It pulled itself together and swiped at her, giving it enough time and room to complete an attack of its own. A magical circle appeared under its feet as it let out a howl. The undead around it seemed to reciprocate the howl.
Shut up!
Steve's hit smashed the howling Bone Lord into the ground. Anna and Dia were there to ravage it with their attacks as Steve hacked its leg off. The Bone Lord's legendary move took effect. The undead redoubled their efforts, going into a frenzy, and pushed back Dave and Duca and Susie. Hamdir's eyes found Malsor. His body seemed to distort for a moment. He let out a yell that seemed to pass throughout the entire library. The undead took pause at the roar that Malsor had let rip. Hamdir's eyes went open. He had only heard his roar, but his blood chilled with the power in it. It seemed to cancel out the Bone Lord's yell as Party Zero redoubled their efforts, yelling their defiance.
"You shall not pass!"
Dave yelled, before he devolved into childish giggling, while still killing undead. Hamdir noticed fighting styles that he hadn't seen in years, and others that had been imprinted onto him from fighting since a youth. Dave moved from reaping wheat to cleaving tree and bending willow, through to morning rise, back down into dragon's wings, and Whirlwind's Mercy. The blending of styles so completely was an art form in itself. Dave's weapons changed as needed to create the most damage, adding extra weight in the downstroke to get the most out of the attack and then reducing the weight while he pulled back so he could counterattack faster. As the others of Party Zero did a dance of magic, Dave danced with a multitude of weapons. He was second only to Anna and Dia. Each of their attacks were made to inflict the most damage. Their weapons an extension of themselves, their powers an enhancement of their weapons and their movements. Their dance was a deadly one. Steve was a brawler. There were hints that he was coming to learn more about fighting, yet brute strength ruled with him. Hamdir couldn't even try to attempt to understand the powers or art that Malsor and Duca and Susie were using. But he could tell from his own adventures and experiences that they were no simple mages. Hamdir found himself smiling, remembering how he had once seen such fights as a mere challenge. I wonder if none of my friends ever died from those adventures, whether I too would have the same smile on my face.
Master, the demon's progress is on schedule. There has been consistent fighting between the demons. It seems that their aura has grown stronger than we thought. There are no creatures left in the wilds for them to fight.
Bornal's eyes focused on his master's back as the Dark Lord overlooked a glowing orb that moved and changed. It was showing a real-time view of Amarillia. It specifically looked at Père Rouge, moving from one area to another rapidly.
What of their strength?
The Dark Lord's voice rumbled through the room. Although he was interested, it was clear he didn't care for the well-being of his creations.
They have started fighting among one another, more to sate their hunger for souls. They grow in strength by the day. A few have even shown a talent for magics. It is limited and uncontrolled, but it is there.
Good, so long as they have the strength needed. Once they get to Devil's Crater, then they can hunt the dungeons and creatures in the area. The surrounding towns and cities have forgotten their fear and their master. Send envoys to their cities.
looking to convert them to our cause. Those who do shall be spared. Those who do not, we will convince or destroy, so that no one else in the Pantheon might claim them.
Yes, my lord.
Born Al bowed, taking that as his dismissal.
I'm so bored.
A woman swung her feet back and forth on her throne as she pouted. She had white hair and porcelain-smooth skin. Her lips were pink, and her face would make many men and women of all races lose their ability to think straight.
My lady, you just played a prank on the King of Issa and made Queen Faerûn and Emperor Talis think that he was weak and start preparations to go to war.
Venfic, her advisor said, not looking out over his scroll. He was an elf. His hair had long turned to white, while his eyes had been turned white by coming into the Lady of Air's service. She did not have champions. Instead, her creatures of power were dotted all over Amarillia, garnering respect for their power, or spite for their trickery.
But that was last month.
She kicked her heels against her chair.
What about something with the Mages Guild?
Of the other lords and ladies of the Affinities Pantheon, most advisors held them in respect, and even if they were about to make a bad decision, they kept their tone light, trying to convince them through other means. Venfic's tone was like beaten steel.
The Lady of Fire has made it clear that while you are welcome to come to her college and make use of her guild, if you mess with either of them, she will destroy all of your creatures of power.
It seemed she wasn't that happy when you started all those rumors of her return, or sent the guild on a wild goose chase for a magic well in the middle of the Dark Lord's maze in Ashal, while she was saying goodbye to her dragons 400 years ago. Add to that, she is, if not in an alliance with Water, at least on amicable terms, so it would be best to stay away from them.
But we could always mess with the Lord of Water,
Air whined, much like a child might when asking their parent whether they could go outside to play Pretty Please with a cherry on top.
At times you are the smartest lady I know, at others I don't know what is going on in that mind of yours. Answer me this. Do you care for the people of Amarillia?
Well, yes, of course. If I didn't have them around, how would I have my fun? Also, it's not like my pranks hurt anyone. Like Faerûn is going to give up on her idea of war because she wants to get her best people into the dwarven tournaments next year. Talis might call himself an emperor, but he's really just got 2 cities. And while he's an idiot, he's not stupid enough to attack Issa without at least 1 more person in the fight. He wins by playing in the shadows and swooping in once victory is assured. Also, the Prince of Issa and Avestra, the Princess of Rayolo, daughter of Faerûn, are interested in each other.
Air had a pleased smile on her face.
I'm guessing that you had a part to play in that.
Well, of course. All that war is getting really annoying, and I don't like Talis much. Having Rayolo and Issa come together would join 2 decent-sized Ashal kingdoms.
Also, might have given the 2 of them a mirror of communication after giving them plenty of time to talk to each other at one of the peace treaty talks.
Air smiled at her own brilliance. She missed Venfic's smile. It was not too dissimilar to the smile a parent might have when their child had done something to make them proud.
Well then, how about instead of sowing chaos, we sow alliances?
Why would we do that?
Air frowned.
There is a war coming, Air. Dark, light, and earth are massing their forces. They have more champions than ever, and if they don't have creatures of power out in Amarillia already, they are working on them as quickly as possible. If we are to sow the seeds of alliances, we could bring the people of Amarillia together. It is much harder to build something than it is to play a prank on them. I don't know if you would be up for the challenge.
Venfix said in a dismissive tone.
I see what you're trying to do, making me want to take it because I want to show you that I can do anything that I put my mind to, and show you why I'm the smartest of the Pantheon.
Air had an excited expression on her face. So you're not going to do it? Venfix asked.
I didn't say that. This is my home as well, and I'm not going to let those other lords and ladies get all the headlines. I accept your challenge slash not challenge.
She looked confused at her own words. Venfix laughed and shook his head. Very well, my lady. What shall we do?
I don't know. Let's go and ask Bob.
With that, the two of them disappeared from the room. The others who lived within the Lady of Air's hall smiled. A few laughed and rolled their eyes. For the most part, there was an anticipation and excitement in their eyes. Much like their lady, they hated just lounging around. Bob felt as someone entered his hall. He turned from his seat.
This better be good, he muttered, as he walked through the halls.
It didn't take him long to reach the room where the two people had teleported into. He frowned as he recognized Air's aura and her minder, Venfix.
What are you doing on my ship?
Bob demanded.
We came to find out who are good people to make alliances with, Air said, her usual excitable self.
Bob looked to Venfix.
Hey, I'm the Lady of Air, she complained,
pouting and stomping her foot.
When you act your age like you did 300 years ago, I'll ask you the big questions.
Bob knew that Air was as smart as they came. Instead of putting it into something useful, she used it to create pranks and make new creatures of power. She might not have that much power, but even with what she had, she was a force to be reckoned with. Bob knew that half of her actions were a facade, to get people to think of her as a teenager, in goddess form. The other half was because she was lazy, and it was easier for others to deal with explaining things. He knew the complexities of her projects. They left his mind in twisters for it all.
The Lady of Air is interested in making alliances between different groups. She sees it as a sort of challenge. As it is easy to bring the people of Emerylia to fighting, it is harder to make them make peace and fight together. We know that there is a war coming, and we would like to see that we ally the right groups together, I think.
Venfix looked to his lady, who shrugged.
Pretty much.
Why would I tell you about any possible alliances I have in the works? If I did tell you, what is to stop you from letting the rest of the Pantheon know? Or to pull the alliances apart?
Bob asked.
Oh, well, trust?
Bob crossed his arms. His eyebrow rose as he tapped his foot.
You know, I am rather busy.
Fine. Well, we could make a contract.
Air rolled her eyes.
Do you think me an idiot? I know how you can get out of contracts like air out of a balloon.
Ugh. Well, what else?
Air threw her hands down in defeat. Bob studied her for a few minutes.
I will tell you something. Something that only you might understand.
Air's eyes thinned for a second. Bob saw through the teenager facade.
You've seen the limits of this planet. The rules that govern us all. The ones that I myself am beholden to and limited by. The forces that control me, and all that goes on in Emerylia.
And you say that I'm slippery with my contracts?
She said with a sly smile, showing that she hadn't been just staring off into space through the meetings they held. Bob returned the smile and chuckled.
Quite. Anyway, with this war, it will not just be Emerylia anymore. It could pull in forces much bigger than anything we have ever faced before.
Bob held Air's eyes and saw his words hitting home.
The forces that will be visited upon Emerylia will be massive. The coming years will be like nothing this planet has ever seen in its entire history. It is not simply the alliances of one group against another anymore.
There was only the odd thrumming of Bob's hull as Air and the Grey God exchanged looks. Venthyk shivered, overwhelmed with what Bob was saying. A smile spread across Air's face.
Well, then, it seems that we have two people to meet first if we want to get these alliances started. How interesting. Uniting Amarillia.
She made an amused noise.
Now that will be exciting.
She disappeared from the deck, taking Venthyk with her. Bob looked at the space where they had stood, his features unreadable.
I hope it's for the best.
He turned and headed deeper into his home. He still had a lot of work to do, and Shard had patched him into the Aleph College's feeds to see the fight between the Stone Raiders and the Arch Lich. Chapter 16. Regroup.
All right, everyone, follow the route and we'll pull back to Lucy's location, Josh said for the fifth time.
All of the Stone Raiders tensed, ready for the run.
Move!
As one, the Stone Raiders' melee fighters pulled back and away from the undead. The mages unleashed their biggest spells and legged it. The undead were slowed as the Stone Raiders ran, because their lives depended on it. They exited through another path into the arena. Waiting support mages sealed it up with dirt, metal, and stone. Josh looked on his minimap. All of the other parties that were split off were also pulling to Lucy's location. Only Party Zero was unable to run. Josh didn't have anyone he could send to them and help them escape. He knew that the phylactery was in the library with them.
I just need time to pull the guild together, get them organized. Then I can send someone to help them. Hopefully we attract enough attention from them that they can escape and meet up with us.
Josh checked the time. They had been in the college for 5 hours already. They were at 50% of their fighting force. In just over an hour, more of the Stone Raiders would respawn and could join back into the battle. They ran between different buildings that looked similar to the college that Josh had gone to. They were better made, with the Aleph's mix of natural aesthetics and functionality. Josh looked toward the loud noises that could be heard in the distance. He laughed as he saw the magical firepower that Kim was putting out, laying waste to anything that got in her way.
Well, I guess this is what we get for stopping her experiments inside. Now when Kim gets outside, she tries to blow up someone else's buildings.
The Stone Raiders laughed, excited to be alive, to be on the raid, and confident in their skills and power.
Watch out!
Dia called. Anna jumped away from the Bone Lord, as Steve threw himself out of the Bone Lord's range, as it reached 25% health.
Fuck, scratch the paint!
Come on, dude! You know how annoying it is to fix your heavy ass,
Dave complained, as he fired out a lightning orb into the center of his undead opponents. As time had gone on, he had gotten used to fighting the undead. They were higher levels and harder targets, but it was easy to tell what their basic attacks were going to be by their rough form. The undead weren't that smart and kind of robotic, which led to Dave's hallways being a mass of slowly dissolving bodies and tombstones waiting to be looted. The Bone Lord raised its hands up. Bones from the undead in range, both animated and not, were ripped out of their original positions and swarmed around the Bone Lord to repair its wounds. Its eyes glowed in victory as it looked at its three main opponents, all of them tired and low on energy.
Dave! Cut the damn feeds! I've had enough of this prick,
Malsor said, his voice growing deep. Dave closed his eyes, conjuring items into the magical circuits that formed recording devices that could see into the lobby.
Done! The Arch Lich is probably going to sense whatever you're doing.
Let him!
Malsor's voice grew deeper as his body elongated. His tired and sweaty expression faded away in relief as black scales spread across his body. He shook himself, his legs growing claws as wings sprouted from his back.
"Much easier."
Malsor's voice was deep and powerful as he looked at the recovering Bone Lord. Malsor let out a powerful bellow. Black flames came out in the stream. The Bone Lord let out a painful screech. Dia watched the power of a true dragon. Malsor walked forward. His flames made the Bone Lord's 60% health plummet. The Bone Lord continued to try to regenerate. Susie, Induka, and Dave stayed back, as their opponents were torn apart to fuel the Bone Lord's need for new bones to stay together. Malsor slowed his burn, as hundreds of creatures were torn apart. The Bone Lord consumed all of its allies, as its repair skill was active. It finally gave up. The Bone Lord sunk to its knees, as Malsor's flames intensified. Malsor's flames disappeared. There were ripples in the ground from their impact and intense heat. Different inanimate objects had grown in odd ways under the pure dark mana flames. There was only a tombstone to mark where the Bone Lord had been.
"And stay down. Fucking thing was doing my head in."
Malsor's voice got deeper and more powerful as he shook his majestic bulk.
"I can't hold the walls much longer in my other form. I suggest someone grabs that Bone Lord's loot and we go group up with the others."
"Oh,
and has someone got a mana potion?"
Malsor asked.
"Don't fuck with the dragon," Dave said. The creature that they had taken hours to whittle down, Malsor had torn apart in mere minutes.
"Words to live by," Induka said.
"Malsor is right. We're all tired. Dave and I will lead. Anna, Steve, at the back. Rest of you in the middle." Dia looked to Anna and then the tombstone. Anna clicked it and opened a prompt. She took all the loot from the tombstone, which disappeared moments later.
"On the road again. Road again,"
Steve said.
"Well, you just ruined one of the great Willie Nelson's greatest songs," Dave sighed. "What is with you gamers and damn music lyrics all the time? If it's not Another One Bites the Dust, it's Let the Bodies Hit the Floor," Susie said.
Her different creations jumped into her bag of holding. Her air creations held on to her, light creations attached to them.
"Well, you're a gamer too. Should get to know the lingo," Dave quipped.
"Well, what about that big lummox? He's a damned AI in a big metal box with arms and legs. Anna, what the hell did you teach him?"
"Well, he always had a great interest in players. He picked up a few things, I think. It was half the problem with why he was a pain in the ass to control. Always wanted to go on adventures like players," Anna said.
"Am I the only one thinking that this might not be the best place to talk about this?"
Malsor asked.
"I just usually wait until they run out of steam."
Induka and Dia shared a knowing and sympathetic look.
"And we're running."
Dia jogged for the door Dave had been defending. The rest of the party followed. Malsor turned into his human form, a look of strain on his face for a few moments before they exited the library and back out onto the stairs that led up to it. Dave closed his eyes, allowing the video feed to reactivate. Immediately, Dave sensed someone using the video feed to study the library.
"I wonder what they think of our renovations."
Dia let out an angry cry.
"Fire plow!"
A plow shot out in front of her, accelerating as it went. It didn't kill many of the undead that were rushing up the steps, but it did throw them out of the way as the party moved forward. The plow ran out, and Susie took her turn. A half-dozen beams of light projected out of her light creations. Undead screamed in pain as they looked upon the light or were found in its path. Their bodies erupted in flames with the holy light. Steve just hummed tunelessly and swiped his axe as if he were going through a field of grass, cutting down the stunned undead. Anna hurled out her wind blades. Whistling came from overhead. Dave's artillery spears of light landed in the biggest groups of undead and turned them into flying bits.
"Ah, I do love a nice mid-afternoon jog," Dave said, loud enough for everyone to hear.
"It's 3 in the morning, Susie said.
"Well, it's mid-afternoon somewhere, right?"
"If there is a god, please, for my sanity, make him shut the hell up."
Even though they were heavily outnumbered and charging through a horde of undead, Party Zero laughed together. It might have sounded tired or relieved, but still, they laughed.
Chapter 17. Much Needed Respawns.
"We're not going to be able to get through here," Dia said, as they looked along their fourth route. It was filled with undead.
Dia looked over everyone. They had been fighting for just over 6 hours, most of it fighting in the library or running away from undead and various creatures in the college. Even with their high endurance, their fights had taken a heavy toll on their bodies.
"Pull back to the teleport pads," Dia yelled.
Dave grunted as he was hit by an undead and flew back a few feet. He got to his feet, clearly wobbly.
"I've got him."
Steve grabbed Dave.
"Let's go,"
Dia said. They turned from the undead. Dia cast her fire plow as Nduka let loose a plasma cannon shot into the undead swarming behind them.
"I can't do another shot in this form," Nduka said.
The strain of casting so much magic was clear in her voice.
"I've got maybe a few more shots," Susie said.
"I'm okay for a bit," Malsor said.
Dia felt the anxiety in her stomach as she charged after her plow. Anna ran up next to her. The two of them cut down anything that got in their way.
"How you feeling?"
Anna asked.
"Got some still left in the tank.
Head's hurting like hell, and I'm tired and hungry,"
Dia admitted.
"We've got this," Anna said.
Dia gritted her teeth and plowed on. She was covered in bruises, and she'd gained a concussion from something hitting her hood. Her armor's mana barrier stopped her from getting her head caved in, but the shock was still partly transmitted to her head. She blinked fiercely. The sudden light of her fire attacks made her brain shudder in pain. She drove on, keeping up her attacks. As much as it hurt, she didn't dare to slow them down.
"Where are they going?"
Hamdir watched Party Zero.
"Looks like back to the teleporters. Seems that they can't break through to the main group of Stone Raiders, and the Arch-Lich is sending a lot of his forces to try to hunt them down."
Shard sounded almost nervous.
"Will they make it?"
Hamdir asked.
"I don't know."
Shard shrugged.
"Smart move. Go back to the teleporters and then come out at another location,"
Frenic grunted.
"They'll most likely group up with their respawned forces," Shard said.
There were looks of confusion. Shard changed the main viewing screens that were in the center of the council's chamber. Around 40 Stone Raiders stood in a teleport pad room. Stone Raiders entered through one of the teleport pads, opening their soul-bound bags of holding and equipping any gear that they had lost on their dead bodies in the college.
"Where are they coming from?"
Sela asked.
"Our very own Altar of Rebirth."
Shard changed the view. The Altar of Rebirth blazed white before a Stone Raider practically leaped off the altar and rushed through rooms and the teleport pad that linked the Altar of Rebirth in Alephir to the city that the Stone Raiders were living in.
"Is there not an issue with them possibly running through Alephir?"
Koza asked.
"I asked Josh to make sure that no one goes through areas that they are not allowed access to. Few have deviated from the direct path from the Altar of Rebirth to the teleport pad. While there is a fight going on, I wouldn't think any of them would try to search Alephir. All they want to do is get back into the fight."
Hamdir sat back in his chair and looked over the fortress that the Stone Raiders had made in the middle of the college's main street. A 5-meter by 10-meter trench ringed their defenses. Metal spikes sprouted from it. ready to claim anything that tried to get close. Priests and mages with a light affinity blessed the metals. Just being close to them, the undead felt pain. By the minute, the trench grew wider. Battlements stood above the trench, walls of earth. On the first floor, melee fighters fired bolt throwers, or used their spears to keep anything from making it to their walls. On the second floor, there were archers. The third floor held casting balconies for the mages. It had taken minutes for the fortress to take form. From the speed of its creation, it was a structure that they had practiced making dozens of times. It was simple, inelegant, but functional. Mages grouped together inside the fortress on raised platforms. They conjured artillery spells. The mages on the walls guided the spells into the undead. Bone lords and larger undead creations like the shambling mounds caused trouble, but the stone raiders were figuring out a system to deal with them as time went on. Hamdir leaned forward as he looked at a crafter working on the wall with a chisel and mallet. What are they carving into the walls? It is code runing, a refined form of magical circuits. It should make the walls stronger or give them different attributes, depending on what the coding entails, Shard said.
I've had a look at it. Formulaic, but simple, and easy to understand. A certain refinement to it that makes it alluring, Frenick said.
They've built a fortress in a matter of minutes, and now they're ruining the damn walls? What kind of monsters are they?
Koza said breathlessly.
They've adapted to being the weakest in any situation. It is why they are never confident in their own skills and their defenses. They will constantly work on themselves and their skills to give them an edge.
Party Zero is nearly at a teleport pad,
Elidorn squealed. Anxiety, excitement, and hope mixed on her face as she balled her fists together, as if praying for the party to make it. Hamdir changed screens. Light blinded him, as the light creations around Susie seemed to shine in brilliance. Dozens of undead were wiped away by the magical attack. Induka made to grab her as she fell, but Malsor was there, scooping her up over his shoulder. Steve caught the now inert creation cores as they fell. Induka caught others with fire whips. Dia and Anna tore through the undead. Their grace from before changed to mindless strength. They were too tired to do anything but react. They entered the teleport control room and turned to cover the others. Malsor and Induka ran to them, their own dark and fire magics tearing at those who tried to follow them. Steve crashed through a wall, covering Dave so he didn't get hurt. He slammed shoulder first into the first floor and pushed himself up to his feet. Hamdir didn't miss the look of determination on the behemoth's face. The normally joking AI concentrated on just one thing, keeping his friends alive. The other conscious four let him pass, backing up as their magic and attacks made the undead and living creatures pay dearly for following them. Malsor and Induka passed through the teleport pads event horizon. Dia grabbed Anna and jumped into the air, holding her hand out as four plasma cannons appeared and fired. They were thrown backward and through the teleport pad that cut off before the explosion of plasma could follow. They lay on the ground of the teleport room where the rest of the stone raiders who had respawned were waiting. Dia passed out. Anna stayed on the floor, panting. Malsor groaned, laying Susie down before he rolled onto the ground himself. Induka checked Susie over as the ground shook with Steve lying down.
Someone give me a soul gem.
The stone raiders in the teleport room rushed to help their fellows, administering healing, as well as various potions to regenerate mana and reduce fatigue. Food and water was produced.
What are they going to do next?
Josh drank the sports drink concoction and let out a breath as he sat down heavily. They had been fighting for 6.5 hours. They'd been able to set up a camp of sorts, with the undead all around them. It was amazing what a few earth and dark mages could do with plenty of mana and the right kind of motivation. The undead kept coming, pushing one another into the growing pit ahead of the battlements, or getting hit by the ranged weapons and spells. Half of the 70 or so stone raiders who had made it so far were recovering, meditating, eating, drinking, and caring for their weapons. Lucy was running supplies. Jules, who had survived, was running medical. Essa was leading melee. Kim ran the ranged magical fighters. Mikal had the archers and the melee fighters armed with bows, if they could handle it, bolt throwers and crossbows if they couldn't. Josh's purchases for the guild had made every member capable of fighting at distance. It had already paid off for itself, as melee fighters plugged away with bolts. A drop pad had been erected and powered up. Supplies came in from Shard, who had automatons picking up supplies stacked around the Stone Raiders' tower and pushing them through to the Stone Raiders.
Okay, so, are we going to link up with you in the fortress, or do you want us to fight our way to the phylactery?
Dia asked.
How strong are Susie's air creations? Josh asked through the private chat. I'm not sure. Well, if they're capable of holding people up, then I have an idea.
Chapter 18 Fly, Monkeys, Fly. Dia finished talking to the Stone Raiders who were gathered back in the tower.
Well, hell, sounds easy when you put it that way, Dave said.
Dia gave him an unamused look before she turned to Susie.
Can you do it?
Yeah, I can, but it's going to make me useless after, and I'm going to need to come with you. The distance is just too large for me to command the creations by myself.
What if instead of flying the entire way, we just did till we got to the campus buildings on either side of the main strip?
Then to cross the distance between the roofs and the Grand Library, Anna interjected.
That would help out a lot, Susie admitted. We could also put drop pads at different locations so that even if this does get all messed up, then we'd at least be starting from somewhere closer, Malsor said.
Agreed. Could you and Dave make the preparations or see if we have any spare drop pads?
On it! Dave got to his feet. It had been an hour since they'd escaped from the college, and although he had been largely healed, he was still weak from expending so much mana and stamina.
All of them were. But the longer they waited, the longer the Arch-Lich would have to prepare.
Okay, we've got an hour. Be ready.
What the hell is that?
Josephine asked her partner Mikal in close-area chat.
Bone Lords? Though they're so far away. Damn, it's hard to make out with the shadows.
Mikal held his tongue, using his natural abilities as well as a spell of far sight to see what they were talking about. Two massive creatures of bone slowly made their way through the ranks of undead. The undead moved out of their way, a parting sea of bodies.
What is that on them? It almost looks like it's alive. Looks kind of like darklings.
Jake, get over here! I've got some weird-ass undead that have arrived,
Mikal called out. Jake didn't take long to show up, eating a vibrant bowl of salad. Completely at odds with his own pale complexion.
What?
Jake munched on a leaf. Mikal pointed to the two creatures. Jake squinted. Mikal cast far sight on him as his fork stopped in midair.
Well, holy shit! Those are bone creations, alrighty. But they're imbued with dark energy. How the hell did he do that?
Aren't all bone creations made of dark energy?
Josh walked into the room.
Well, it's the glue that holds them together. It would be better to say that they have been given corrupting energy. The dark miasma that is leaking out of their bodies across their spikes and weapons is a powerful corrupting force. It's been attached and imbued into the creatures themselves. I wouldn't be surprised that if those creatures got within range of us, they would give off a corrupting aura that would arm all of us within its sphere of influence.
So, it would be scary as hell?
Josephine asked.
It would taint the air and the ground, damaging any within a certain range. Getting cut by one of those blades would not be fun.
Jake shook his head. So we keep it out of the fortress and hit it at range, Josh said.
Best bet. Those things get in here, it's going to be a mess. They're level 207, but their natural abilities are going to make them scary as hell.
Add in the fact that with their arms and spiked bodies, any attack we land is likely going to hurt the attacker.
Mikal trailed off.
Kim, I've got a new target for you. Mikal, send a message to the Flying Monkey Brigade. They've got until those things start getting into range.
Josh marched away from the wall.
Get ready! There are two unknown mobs walking toward the fortress. Josh wants us to head out toward the library before they reach the fortress. You've got 10 minutes,
Dia yelled. Thankfully, all of those who had respawned came back with full energy. Party Zero were the only ones who had to gain back their strength the hard way. Stamina came back quickly due to their high endurance. The same went for mana, which they could all supplement with the 4 sets of Abscondita armor they could all draw power from. There was a group of 50, all of them staying off to the side. Those who had respawned, but had not been picked, armed themselves, either from the guild's weapons or used their own soulbound weapons. With their high levels and the amount of wealth they had, a number of them had been able to get soulbound weapons. There were 3 crafters who could take care of the binding of the weapons. Still, the weapons were rare and expensive. Only about 5% of the Stone Raiders had them. Most just had duplicates, all of them veteran raiders, ready for the eventuality of their deaths. They walked through the other teleport pad that was open, going right into the middle of the fortress to support the raiders who hadn't died. The 50 or so fighters came together, ready for their mission. Dia looked around, seeing that they were all accounted for.
Let's go steal that Archlich's soul box.
She turned to lead the 50 stone raiders out into the fortress. They moved off to the 3rd story that was closest to the buildings in the direction of the Grand Library. Air creations started to fly out of Susie's back. Her staff glowed with power as they attached themselves to the backs of the 50 stone raiders.
Good luck,
Josh called out.
Good to go,
Susie reported.
Let's go.
Dia yelled back over the size of the undead, both alive and being put to rest, as spells, bolts, and arrows screamed through the air.
Fly, monkeys, fly!
Steve took a running leap off the 3rd-story magical balconies. His flying was more like slowly falling as the 4 air creations attached to him fought to make sure he didn't go crashing through the buildings he was supposed to land on.
This is not the Land of Oz!
Dave shook his head in pain at another movie reference being lost on his hopeless friends. Dia laughed, despite the seriousness of what they were doing. Susie's air creation picked her up off the roof and flew with the other stone raiders, quickly crossing over the undead. One was pulled from the air by an undead shambling mound's vines. Mages back in the fortress sent spell after spell into the shambling mound, before it could bring the stone raider into its maw. The vines were cut, and the air creation tore the stone raider away from the shambling mound. It let out a keening wail as it succumbed to the mage's spells, crushing an undead minotaur at its side. Dia landed on the buildings. No one needed to be told anything, as they ran for the Grand Library. Steve already led the way. She cast a glance back at the fortress. The 2 bone creations that had scared Josh into action were now close enough to be analyzed. Bone Juggernaut, level 207.
Pick up the pace!
Dia had a sense of foreboding when she looked at the 2 juggernauts.
If we don't deal with this phylactery, I think we're screwed.
The thought pervaded her mind. As much as she wanted to ignore it, she couldn't. She picked up her pace, and the stone raiders sprinted over the rooftops with ease. Chapter 19. Failures and Successes.
Those conspiring creatures! What do they know of true magic? Using creations to carry them, scared to even face my creatures. I will show them. I will make bone archers and draugr when I leave this place. Undead legions capable of shooting arrows and magic, as well as tearing them apart on the ground.
The archlet screamed. The room he was in looked as though it was rotting, as his corrupting influence escaped his control in a fit of anger. He was furious at the creatures that not only dared to kill his experiments, but then tried to escape his juggernauts as they were finally reaching the fortress the maggots had made. He wouldn't admit his own frustrations at not foreseeing the need for archers or ranged attackers. He had moved in more undead shambling mounds around the fortress, so that no more were able to escape. The archlich's attention was focused on his newest creations. He willed his lesser undead into the pit that had claimed so many of them. They howled in pain and anger at being unable to reach their opponents. The undead writhed and screamed on the blessed metal spikes, but more and more of them filled the pit. They advanced over the carcasses of one another, creating a bridge across the spikes. More and more undead accepted their deaths. The fighters in the fortress focused all of their attacks on the juggernauts. One lost 25% health. They focused all their attacks onto the one creature. It howled out and turned with speed that belied its size. The dumb creature, not understanding where it was, followed its instincts to activate its legendary action, to cut down anything that was within 50 meters of it. That included the other juggernaut. It was thrown back, losing 15% of its health from the attack.
Well, there are bound to be a few sacrifices. I will have to look at trying to make them smarter. It will be annoying to have them act the same way every time.
The archlich drifted over to a bookshelf and pulled off a book with his thin, skeletal fingers. The juggernaut recovered from its legendary attack, but the obnoxious living maggots had taken out a further 7% of its health, with status effects slowing the juggernaut further and stacking damage upon it. Even with the vicious spells, the juggernaut's massive health pool was going down slowly. It staggered under multiple magical artillery barrages, the undead around it obliterated. It took a step forward. The undead had to keep throwing themselves on the spikes that were now moving in order to keep their bridge. The second juggernaut started to rise with difficulty, its blade arms stuck into the ground, cutting through it. Its corruption seemed to melt the ground, making it slip and snarl. The archlich gave out a displeased noise as he sent some of his larger undead to help the second juggernaut to its feet.
They dare to wound my newest creations?
His voice slightly crazed, his prior amusement turning to cold anger. It was clear that his forces were taking heavy losses, but with time, they would crush the Stone Raiders. There were many more undead than Stone Raiders, and they were unending. The Stone Raiders were burning through their mana pools. The archlich turned from his research for the first time in forever. He had given up his body and his people, so that he could learn more about the secrets of magic. To any, its anger would have sent shivers down their spines. Drawing such a powerful creature's gaze could only mean one thing. Death was coming for those that angered him.
Skewer that fucker!
Josh yelled out. The first juggernaut was just crossing the undead bridge, while the second looked like a comedic skit, if it wasn't for the fact it could shrug off magical artillery, and it was taking the biggest and strongest of the undead to get it back on its feet. The first juggernaut made it 3 meters, its feet on the undead bridge that sagged underneath it. More undead threw themselves down to try to make sure it wasn't speared by the metal spikes below. They'd forgotten one thing. The spikes had been pulled from the earth by dark mages. Spikes shot through the undead bridge and from its sides. As they slammed into the juggernaut, it cried out, making those nearest duck at its screams. Its corrupting powers made the spikes dissolve with necrotic damage. As one spike was destroyed, another sped out of the ground in its place. Priests, healers, and light mages could be heard giving out their blessings on the metal constructs, and also covering the juggernaut in what looked like a cloak of golden light. The corrupting forces warred against the power of the light, eating at each other. Josh laughed at it all, filled with pride and excitement at his own stone raiders. The power that they were throwing out sent shockwaves through the air.
"That's how the stone raiders do it! Get some of that, you parky fuck!"
The stone raiders stood on a precipice. If they worked together, flawlessly, they might possibly defeat the bone juggernaut. If they didn't, then they'd fall apart and be killed. There was no time for second-guessing. They were reacting, working together. One guild, one group pulled together by the desire to be the best raiders in all of Amarillia. They yelled and screamed out different words, but if one was to see their faces, instead of cold fear, they held eerie smiles. This was what they had come for. This was what they desired to do. If they were to pick one thing out of anything else that they wanted to do, it was this. To fight beside their friends against a supposedly unbeatable opponent. Here, they were in their element. All of their passions were realized, their hearts thumping in their chests. They had never felt so alive. Gamers were introverted people for the most part. But here, right now, they cried out for more bolts, called out weaknesses. They didn't care about their social anxieties and fears. All that was swept away. They were their characters, and nothing was going to stop them.
"That's right, you arch-lich dickhead! You fucked with the wrong bloody people! Don't you know who the Stone Raiders are?"
Josh laughed. He grabbed a bow from his bag of holding and fired into the juggernaut that was slowly walking across its fellows that were trying to rush past it and cover the spikes before it. They had to replace their disappearing forces that had already sacrificed their bodies. Josh's eyes lit up with the tombstone markers dotted over the battlefield. Josh fired into the juggernaut again and again. The entire guild was focused on the big bastard. It reached 50% health, but the guild didn't let up, hammering it for all it was worth, not letting loose its legendary skill. The juggernaut gave up as it approached 40% health. It staggered forward, as if it was almost drunk, as it tried to reach the wall. It got to 30% when it finally reached the fortress wall. Its bladed hand crashed into the wall, cutting through it and corrupting the metal, earth, and stone that made it.
"Eat this, dipshit!"
Matt called out, as magical runes flared in protection. The juggernaut was thrown back 50 meters, disintegrating as it went. The stone raiders cheered, yelling at the undead, some of which charged over their dead to try to climb the walls or get through the large hole the juggernaut had opened. The undead that got their limbs through were cut apart as the walls closed on them. The ones crawling the walls forgot about the melee fighters. Spears and staves tossed them off the walls and into the spike pits below. The second juggernaut finally rose to its feet. Josh hadn't needed to say anything. The Stone Raiders' attacks centered on the second juggernaut. The strongest of the undead had been needed to raise the thing back onto its feet. Now they were wiped out by the spells and long-range weapons raining down on the juggernaut. It didn't have time to move, as it hit 25%. The Stone Raiders stopped attacking. The juggernaut sliced and diced its way through any of its remaining comrades that had allowed it to regain its feet.
"Focus on the other undead!" Josh called out.
He looked to Jake, who rubbed his hands in anticipation. Undead started to climb up the buildings, but they were too slow to catch the Stone Raiders. In the distance, through the low light and flickering mage lights, Dia saw the grand library and the mass of tombstones at its front entrance. She heard a whistling in the distance as spears slammed into the dome-like structure in the center of the library. The spears were destroyed by a heavy mana barrier. More and more spears rained down from the heavens. Their runes glowed as they hit the barrier. Steve leapt free of the buildings, the air creations on his back doing their best to extend the distance he traveled. Stone raiders followed him off the building, jumping off five-story buildings with complete faith in Susie, as her creations carried them on toward the library. Dia leaped. Her attached air creation guided her flight through the air. A scream tore through the air, making people shudder and break out into a cold sweat.
"Keep moving!"
Dia yelled, as a murderous aura filled with killing intent seemed to erupt throughout the Aleph College's grounds.
"They dare! They dare to kill my juggernaut!"
The area around the Arch Lich started to decay as dark mana spread over 20 feet, looking like black flames, destroying anything in their path.
"I will show them their place as my test subjects. I will turn them into bones of malice and despair through decades of torture."
The Arch Lich floated through an open doorway, his flames destroying the balcony below. He waved his hand. A bone reaver stepped out of the library he had been studying in. The Arch Lich sat on the creature. It looked like a mix between a wolf and a cheetah. Its legs and body were made for speed, with blades for limbs and a wolf skull for a head. Its bones weren't yellow, but black from the Arch Lich using the creature, and his dark affinity and aura corrupting the bones further. All around the Arch Lich, skeleton creatures stepped out of the building, their bones clacking against the surfaces as they let out tortured screams. This was the Arch Lich's true strength, his skeleton army, 1,000 strong creatures that he had sunk his power and time into making. They were the greatest of his weapons.
"Let us go greet your new comrades,"
the Arch Lich rasped, his leathery old face twisted in crazed anger as his eyes glowed with a smoky green light that would make any shirk away in fear. The skeletons raised their weapons, their screeching and pained cheers consoling the Arch Lich as his reaver rushed forwards. The other skeletons mounted other reavers or faster members of the skeleton army, or simply ran forward. He sent commands to his undead forces attacking the stone raiders. They charged forwards, letting out their cries while also making a path for their master skeleton army.
"What the hell?"
Dwayne muttered as the undead were now surging forth.
"They're making a push! Keep them back!"
Josh yelled out. The Stone Raiders' crude defenses lit up with magical spells, destruction staffs, arrows, and bolts.
"To the walls!"
Kim cried out, a note of panic in her voice.
"Don't let what happened with the spiders happen here,"
Josh half thought, half prayed. Anyone that could use a weapon got up to the walls. People that were missing limbs grabbed what they could, dragging themselves to an opening. There was no time for orders. People yelled out to one another, telling where undead were concentrating, pointing out higher-level mobs that were an issue. Most of the creatures were just reanimated dead, making them magical constructs, creatures that contained mana, fighting against the barrier. However, there were also soul-bound undead, similar to Draugr. These were creatures that had their souls forcibly molded and attached to their bodies. They made it to the wall, clawing at it or trying to climb it. They rushed into the spike pit with abandon, even as dark mages increased its depth and width. The undead filled the pit around the defenses, creating bridges for their fellows.
"We've got something approaching in the distance!"
a scout called out, waypointing something. Josh cut off an undead's arms, dropping them down to the writhing mass of undead below. He looked to where the waypoint was, using a far-sight spell.
"What the hell?"
Josh looked at the oncoming army of skeletons and bone creations. Each and every one of the creatures gave off a corrupting aura, similar to the bone juggernauts. He felt a dominating presence among them, his eyes locked with twin green glowing orbs of malice. Josh felt his heart quiver, as the Arch-Lich seemed to look in his very soul and promise him unimaginable pain.